Welcome to Practical Witch Talk, the podcast for practical witches everywhere. I'm your host, Friday Gladheart. This week's almanac has a recipe for protein granola bars and a mention of National Hat Day. That's in the Practical Witches Almanac, if you don't know what I'm talking about. I was going to talk about protein and hats, but instead of protein, I'm going to focus on granola and other topics that come into my mind as adjacent to granola and hats, which means I'm going to be talking about everything from religious zealots, quackery, the temperance movement, and the temperance tarot card, to masturbation, abstinence, wellness gurus, and more. And finally, the ever-popular mise en place segment this week is about stockpiling protection energy. So grab a beverage, settle in, because this is a long episode thanks to being snowbound this week, a rare event in the area of the American Southeast where I live. I did not prepare a full script, so because I digress, hopefully I won't become overly flippant and do something silly and thoughtless like comparing spiritual fraud to physical rape or some other thoughtless remark, like I have shamefully done in a previous episode, so please forgive me for that, and I'll try not to be so flippant. But before we begin, I want you to know that you are invited to stay at the Practical Witch Sanctuary in Arkansas for the April 8th total solar eclipse. I purchased this property over a decade ago with this event in mind. It's weird how I kind of knew it was coming since I read an almanac. It is in the heart of the Path of Totality, the Practical Witch Sanctuary. There's going to be rituals, shopping, bonfires, and I'll be teaching workshops throughout the week. Vending is also free to all campers, so if you make witchy tools or other goodies, you can set up your shop at the gathering. If you're interested, check out arkansaseclipse.org. arkansaseclipse.org. Now on to the podcast. Welcome to the dark side of granola, graham crackers, and breakfast cereal. These things became popular due in part to the rising fear of the cholera pandemic around 1829 to 1837. Pandemic fear, as you well know, causes people to do some stupid things like treating or preventing COVID by using horse warmer or drinking bleach. As people sought new solutions to illness at that time, wellness gurus became all the fashion, all the rage, and the associations these old white men had with printers, wealthy patrons, and religious movements spurred their popularity. Raw food diets and water therapy were growing in popularity, and many health spas, which then were called sanitariums or sanatoriums, they opened to treat any physical, mental, or spiritual ailment. Usually these men touted their diet and health regimes as God's will or the diet God intended. And if I live near Hot Springs, Arkansas, and a lot of overlap in the history I'm talking about has occurred throughout Hot Springs, Arkansas, but I don't want to go into that yet. I want to talk more about quackery in another episode later on in the year. So muesli is the original oat cereal introduced in the early 1900s by the Swiss physician Maximilian Oscar Bircher Benner. He was also a raw food enthusiast and opened up a sanatorium/clinic in Zurich he called Vital Force. He used diet, light therapy, hydrotherapy, that's the water cure, like the American physician John Harvey Kellogg developed. He even used Kellogg's techniques. But I'll swing back around to Kellogg. Yes, the breakfast cereal Kellogg, but first let's talk about granola. So in 1863, James Caleb Jackson was the director of a health spa slash sanitarium in Dansville, New York. He called it the Jackson Sanitarium. It was also known as Our Home on the Hillside. He was a hardcore Christian. He blended science and religious extremism in new and interesting ways, a real heavy emphasis on interesting. As part of his wellness guru prescriptions, he treated people with a diet he called granula, from the Latin word for granum or grain. His granula was made with gram flour and was like really large grape nuts. Kellogg's began making a similar cereal, but had to change the name to granola with the O instead of the U in order to avoid legal issues with Jackson, who was litigious about the name. The graham flour that Jackson used to make his granola was named after Sylvester Graham. Another diet guru and religious zealot, Sylvester Graham was a big part of the biblically fueled temperance movement, which led to prohibition and all the horrible toxicity and organized crime that came from that. I think it's because when he was young, he had to work in a tavern his relatives ran. I also grew up working at a tavern slash dance hall slash restaurant slash country store in the middle of nowhere, Nebraska. And I saw a lot of problems caused by alcoholism and alcohol in general for over a period of over a decade. And I too had some trepidation about alcohol, but I didn't go so far as to get involved in a temperance movement like Graham did. Graham believed in minimizing pleasure and stimulation of all kinds, a toxic theory still prevalent in certain types of New Age practices, and even some yoga, where there's this desire to transcend the physical as if it were separate, contaminated, or lesser than spiritual or intellectual pursuits. Graham believed that God intended people to live according to his natural laws, God's natural laws, and diet, including coarsely ground whole wheat flour, which we call Graham flour. It's a special technique. Vegetarianism and abstinence were all supposedly part of God's laws. The unsweetened, bland, flavorless Graham wafer he created was an attempt to make what he believed was a wholesome staple that would not stimulate or excite. And you'll notice that in certain types of yoga, that you can't have spices or stimulating foods. He tried to become a minister like his dad and his grandfather, but he was expelled from Amherst Academy in under a year. His fellow students thought he was overly dramatic and really attention-seeking, but the expulsion caused him to have a nervous breakdown. He began studying theology privately on his own and eventually became an itinerant preacher at the Presbyterian Church in New Jersey. Now remember, he believed that physical pleasure of any kind, but especially anything that contributed to lust or sexual stimulation, harmed individuals, families, and societies. This is something that's persisted over the years. This was a popular belief during the temperance movement. And yes, this is the temperance illustrated in the tarot card that Pamela Coleman Smith designed in the early 1900s as the temperance movement was gaining force. So Graham let his Christian theology and the Bible dictate diet. But much like the modern toxic prosperity gospel that encourages people to believe that poor people are not in God's favor, Graham believed that plague and illness were caused by living in ways that ignored the so-called natural law or God's law. And this concept was still prevalent when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s in Nebraska, in the Midwest United States. A lot of old Victorian concepts, but especially dietary concepts such as this were still prevalent. And again, going back to the concept of transcending or ascending above the physical, he encouraged no spices or any other stimulants in the diet, cold baths, and sleeping on hard beds. He thought adhering to the bland diet would prevent any lustful or impure thoughts and would stop masturbation, which he believed to be a catalyst for blindness and early death. He was very charismatic, very manipulative as a preacher, and combined his religious fervor with patriotism and the temperance movement. And when some of his patients in New York happened to fare better than others during the cholera pandemic around 1832, his popularity surged and Grahamism became a movement. So that's the Graham flour that was used by Jackson in his granula. He said that his granula was a pure food and it would prepare you for the second coming and that it would hasten the arrival of the second coming, keep you calm, give you better Christian values, and get you into progressive politics. He touted his granula as a way to reduce carnal desire, which leads us back around to John Harvey Kellogg, who changed the name of his cereal from granula to granola to avoid lawsuits from Jackson. So Kellogg wasn't just a health food guru. Oh my. He had his own religious agenda, and as a follower of Horace Fletcher, I don't know if you guys know about Horace Fletcher, he was a quack who advised people to chew each bite of food at least 40 times before swallowing. He believed that good health was indicated by excreta, the poop that doesn't stink. He would examine fecal matter from his patients slash victims, and if it had any bacterial decomposition, any fragrance or odor to it, then they were unhealthy. So Fletcher is considered the father of modern fad diets. His excessive chewing ideas are still present in many fad diet recommendations for weight loss. And I remember coming across that in the early to mid 80s, along with Jane Fonda workouts, as the chewing was something that you did as a weight loss technique. So it persists. My digression was caused by the recollection that Kellogg, highly influenced by Fletcher, often led diners with the chewing song, Chew, 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 That's the Thing to Do. I don't know the tune that went along with it. This was usually done at his sanitarium, which, of course, any white man looking to become a wellness guru must have. So from 1876 to 1943, Kellogg was the director of the Battle Creek Sanitarium in Battle Creek, Michigan. This sanitarium was based on health principles advocated by the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And like Jackson's sanitarium, Kellogg's sanitarium used cutting-edge diet and quackery treatments, including hydroelectric baths that introduced a current into the bathing patient victim to treat lead poisoning, tuberculosis, obesity. And when the current was applied directly to the patient's eyeballs, it was supposed to cure a variety of vision disorders. Kellogg was fairly inventive. He created a lot of his hydroelectric therapies by piecemealing bits of telephone technology together. Kellogg also advocated continuous baths, which, I've heard about these a lot, and I do enjoy a very long bath, but many of his baths lasted hours, fine, days, weeks, and months. Sometimes the patient slash victim was only allowed to come out of the bath in order to use the restroom. His quote was, "It can last hours, days, weeks, or months, as the case may require, often used to treat slash torture women because it was used for a variety of mental maladies such as delirium, hysteria, and mania. But it was also used for men and women both for other diseases, diarrhea, skin diseases in particular. He received two enemas every day, one at breakfast and one at lunch, and he used extreme enemas as a treatment for, well, anything and everything, and prescribed multiple enemas daily for his patients. He even invented this weird enema machine that could move 15 quarts of water through the bowels within seconds. That is excessive. I mean, 15 quarts? Come on. Kellogg invented machines slash torture devices that would encourage circulation and bowel movements with flogging, beating, and vibration. He dedicated the last 30 years of his life to promoting eugenics and segregation. He was against what he called racial mixing and created a registry to keep track of people's medical records so that racial thoroughbreds, this is his words, racial thoroughbreds, could be introduced to each other before marriage. Kellogg favored the forced sterilization of criminals and organized the first race betterment conference. This was simply a thinly disguised fair of racists. It was a fair for eugenicists. The conference hosted what was called a better baby contests, during which white infants were judged and awarded on the basis of their breeding. He began a violent campaign against masturbation, where he was directly responsible for genital mutilation of young men and women. He believed the body is the living temple, and his religious extremism cannot be separated from his guidelines for health. He believed that clean foods, such as his cornflakes and granola, were bland enough to rid people of their carnal desires to eliminate stimulation. He equated the fondness for spicy food, rounded shoulders, and any boldness of a character, particularly in women, with signs of a chronic masturbator, and that, in his words, such victim literally dies by his own hand, which is just, wow. Kellogg encouraged patients to tie their children's hands to their bedposts, bandage the male member, or put a cage over it, circumcise teenage boys without anesthetic, and pour carbolic acid on the female clitoris, or have it surgically removed. More recently, Quaker Oats Company introduced their 100% natural granola in 1972. The company never had any ties with the Religious Society of Friends, that's Quakers, for those of you who don't know, and they used the name to encourage people to associate the company with honesty and integrity, which is really a weird thing to do by deceptively writing on the name used by a religious sect. But I suppose that's nothing new, because here in the Southeast United States, Jesus is used as a primary marketing tool from the Christian handyman sign at the gas station with the little tear-off phone numbers for the faithful to the Jesus fish on billboards for everything from auto sales and plumbers to real estate that I see on my drive to work daily. So Quaker's chewy granola bars used to be really high in trans fats. Some of you might remember this. They were very high in trans fats until they were sued in 2010. Because they were marketing granola bars as heart healthy, as a responsible, healthy choice. So in 2014, after settling the lawsuit, Quaker removed the trans fats from their chewy granola bars, but never denied or recanted the misleading labeling. The Quaker story has a seedy underbelly, or an oaty underbelly, like many of the health food origins. From 1946 to 1953, researchers from Quaker Oats Company, MIT, and Harvard University carried out experiments at the Walter E. Fernland State School to determine how minerals from cereal was metabolized. Parents of disabled children were asked to make their kids members of the science club, and in the science club, they'd be participating in research. The parents were told the kids would be fed a highly nutritious diet, but they were not told that the food their children were fed contained radioactive elements. Those are the elements used to track the calcium and iron movement in the body. To add insult to the non-consensual experimentation, the results from the experiments were to be used as part of an advertising campaign. The company was later sued because of the experiments, but that lawsuit wasn't settled until the last day of December in 1997, so basically 1998. So that's where some of the weirdness of granola's origins are. But don't think I've forgotten to talk about hats. Hats and other headgear have been historically linked to status. However, hats and headgear were around before recorded history, as we can tell from fossilized evidence. Think of how the crown on a royal affects people. The cap of a police officer, the veil of a bride, the visor hat at a sports event, that distinctive conical hat woven from straw and fibers worn by farm workers throughout Asia. Hats can be an instantly recognizable symbol of status and trade. Those making hats from felt in the 1700s and 1800s were exposed to large quantities of mercury, which is probably the origin of the colloquial phrase, mad as a hatter. And now to the ever-popular segment, mise en place magic. This is when you get everything ready that you'll need to perform magic, like prepping at dinner, shopping, but not cooking. One of the most useful types of mise en place magic is that of protection. If you've ever felt like you were under psychic, spiritual, or magical attack, you know that when it is happening, you are the least able to counter the negative effects. So thus, mise en place magic is both prep and a little energy charging. You will be adding energy. And you want to make basically an amulet or a talisman. So you need to find an object. You could have any kind of fetish, a lamp, finial, stone, a crystal, a necklace, or a bracelet. And I do prefer to use certain stones such as tourmaline, obsidian, snowflake obsidian, shungite, things that will hold a good charge and are also known for protection. And often I'll select a necklace or bracelet with these stones because when I need that protection, I'm going to want it portable and on me at all times. So select your object and place it on your altar or in a work surface where you're going to constantly keep it in your mind, that it'll trigger your subconscious to think of these things. When you're feeling really up and really on top of your game and highly energetic, whether that be at 3 a.m. during the full moon or 6 a.m. at breakfast with your cappuccino, when you have a really strong positive energy going on, hold the fetish or the object that you've decided to charge. Do it while you're at your peak and send that energy into the object. This is like you're charging your phone up little bit by bit, but in this case, you're charging your protective talisman up. Anytime that you're feeling really powerful, really energetic, like you can do magic, like it's going to happen, you're going to pick up that object that you've selected and you're going to push that energy into it. As you're pushing that energy into it, what I like to do is, as I'm inhaling, I'll pull energy up from the center of the earth along a thin cord that attaches to the base of my spine. I visualize that energy going up, moving up through my spine. If you do chakra work, you can have it flowing through your chakras, up out of the crown of my head, back down around and into the ground along the outside of that cord and back to the center of the earth where that energy can be neutralized, basically, whether it's positive or negative. So you're pulling up earth energy, letting it flow through you and sending it back down around. Basically a good grounding and centering type of situation, or an earthing situation if you have contact, direct contact with the earth. So during this visualization, I'll inhale and draw energy in, exhale and push the energy out. And then I'll slowly move from this umbrella willow tree thing coming back around outside of the crown of my head back to the ground. I'll slowly move the energy up through my crown and then back down into my arms and hands and then into the object I'm charging. And I'll continue to do that until I feel like I've really pushed as much energy in there as I can. And I've noticed that a lot of, it depends on the material that it's made out of, but a lot of talismans I've chosen, even an object that will take an incredible amount of energy, like tourmaline, it tends to not take a lot of the energy at once. Like little bits frequently do a lot more than a big fell swoop all at once. So anyway, after charging it with as much energy as I can, I'll keep piling up the charge and I'll put it back on the altar or back in a prominent location in the home to kind of keep it in the back of my mind. Now, if I'm going to a sacred space, to a natural spring, or I'm going to go out celebrate under the full moon, I will bring the talisman along. I might dip it into a natural spring or anoint it with moon water. I'll expose it to moonlight or sunlight. I'll take it to sacred spaces where it can also absorb extra energy. And I continue to do this. You can have an ongoing protection charm that you use all the time, or you can do several of these. When you need it, when you're vulnerable or you feel exposed or you feel like you're under attack, or for me, if I'm going into a hostile work situation, although not so much anymore, I quit all those, I will often wear those to protect myself. So after work, I'm coming out clean and feel recharged and I don't feel drained of energy, and any psychic attacks, whether intentional or not, are easier to repel. On a psychological front, just having that object in contact with your skin, whether it be a touchstone in your pocket or a bracelet or a necklace, just seeing it as a reminder that you are powerful. But I, obviously, practical witches have one foot in science and one foot in the magic, so we got to hit all the bases. So thanks for joining me today. Next week, we're going to talk about divination, dice, tarot, and any topics my mind categorizes as adjacent to these topics. If you are in Arkansas, check out Strange Brew Occult Shop in Fort Smith and The Parlor in Hot Springs. They're both wonderful witchy shops. And don't forget to check out ArkansasEclipse.org. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'd love to have you. This has been a production of Practical Witch LLC in cooperation with WitchAcademy.org. You can listen and subscribe on your favorite streaming service. But if you'd like to learn more about witchcraft, herbs, and tarot, check out WitchAcademy.org. Blessed be.